I'm Fiona Nowling, and with me today in the studio is my lovely wife, Una Nowling, behind the board. She's waving, but no one can hear that. And I also have with me Christina Fraser, helping to interview today instead of hidden behind the board.
Hello.
And our guests today are Christine Smith and Jo Anderson from the February Sisters, who are organizing the Women's March in Lawrence next Saturday. And before we start and give them a more detailed introduction, I've got a tiny bit of a song or poem here that Christine wrote, and it talks about a very important event in Lawrence. Now here attend and hear a friend trill forth a harmonious ditty. Strange things I'll tell which late befell right here in River City. 'Twas winter cold with sleet and snow and February rising. A gang of girls in flowing curls pulled off an act surprising.
Step back to February 1972. The feminist movement had gained national attention, Ms. Magazine was about to debut, and Congress was debating an equal rights amendment. At University of Kansas, 30 women and a few children had seized a campus building to bring about changes to benefit women. Known as the February Sisters, the women, representing faculty, staff, and students, risked arrest by occupying a building to demand changes long discussed but never happening. Their action changed a campus still reeling from turbulent anti-war and civil rights demonstrations. The KU women's action gained them a place in campus, if not in women's history. Their half-dozen demands resulted in KU becoming one of the first 50 women's studies degree programs in the nation, the establishment of a campus child care center, full health care services for KU women, and the appointment of more women administrators on campus.
So, Christine and Joe, welcome to the studio today.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here with us. We gave a tiny history of the February Sisters there, but our listeners don't know very much about you individually. So could you each tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Christine Smith. I was born and raised in Kansas City, down here at St. Mary's Hospital. I don't know whether it's still named that. and I've been an activist since I was in high school, basically. I worked with the peace movement and still work with the Lawrence Coalition for Peace and Justice. And I distinguished that from the anti-war movement of the 60s, of the Vietnam War. I worked in civil rights. I worked with the Congress of Racial Equality in Lawrence. We both worked in alternative schools when we had children that were that age. I work with the Coalition for Homeless Concerns. I'm still fighting for justice.
Thank you. Jo?
Okay, and my name is Jo Anderson. I also participated in numerous civil rights, women's rights, anti-war protests, rallies. I remember one time in San Diego in 1969 at a huge anti-war rally. I thought I was going into labor. I was 8.5 months pregnant. And it was Braxton Hicks. The contractions stopped just as I heard the ambulance arrive, and I ran as fast as I could, or rather I waddled as fast as I could, to my car and drove off before they could find me. And then my baby daughter would go with me on numerous rallies and events. During the tumultuous times in 1970 when the Union burned, I became a founding member of the Food Conspiracy, which was a group of us who bought potatoes directly from Maine farmers and sold them to local residents. And this evolved into going out in the country and buying eggs and raw milk and selling them out of a basement.
Awesome.
On 14th Street. And eventually this became the community mercantile.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. And everyone acts like that's something new and that it's only just been thought of recently, the table to market, farm to market, or the things like that.
Exactly.
At the moment.
I love these farmers markets. They're great. I also became very interested in local politics. I became president of my neighborhood association, and then I ran for city commission, and I was elected to a 4-year term. I was mayor 1 year, and my very favorite thing was passage of the Equal Rights Amendment, the Simply Equal Amendment that added sexual orientation to our human rights ordinance. I love that. And also working for greater recreational opportunities for the kids on the east side. And we got a world-class skateboard park.
That's impressive.
I was mayor.
So I was wondering if you guys, if you could take us back to the early 1970s and kind of paint a picture for our audience about what KU was like, what it was like, you know, back then, because I think it's hard to imagine living in the world we live in. I mean, in some ways it's not hard to imagine, but but as far as I was reading that there was some problems with, like, the nurses were nuns at KU. And they were not giving out birth control?
No, it wasn't the nurses. It was the Schwegler who was running the place.
I see.
Was a good Catholic man and would not give birth control even to married women. Hmm. And so what happened was people went to the county health department to get birth control. But the county didn't have the resources to do a whole student body, half a student body. And so you would go to the student health clinic and make up some reason why they would give you an exam, and you would take the results of that down to the county to get 6 months' worth of birth control pills. And the gentleman at the county was very nice about it, but it was just incredible hassle. And if you ask for birth control, you got lectures and that sort of stuff. It was ghastly.
Even at a university.
Yeah.
Which you expect to be liberal and ahead of the times, usually.
Or separation of church and state, at least, right?
But that was the norm in the 70s. And there was a place where you could go. I still remember where it was. And I suppose I shouldn't mention the name, but there was a doctor where you could get birth control and even abortion, but you kept it very secret.
Mm-hmm. And then also, there were no women professors, or few? Or
well, there were no administrators, female administrators.
Oh, administrators.
And there happened to be an opening for a vice chancellor. And so the demand was that particular office be filled by a woman, and it was not. It took us 2 years to get Horowitz.
Right, Frances.
And Frances Horowitz, who was incredible. She is kind of worth the wait.
That's great. Yeah, and then also, the other thing I was really surprised about, it, anybody who lives in Lawrence, is her, even if you don't go to KU, you've heard of Hilltop Daycare. And I had no idea that the February Sisters were the beginning of that.
The demand was for free child care, and it's never been free, but it's still on a sliding scale. Yes, we demanded that in February, and it opened that fall for the fall semester, and was on top of the hill at the time. They've built a lovely, beautiful daycare center down in the valley, which they still call Hilltop, but it started off
on
top of the hill. And it started off with like 30 kids, didn't it? Around
seems
that?
Like it, yeah. But now it grew to 120.
It's a lovely
within
facility.
5 years. It was
bigger. That was a fast reaction, getting it open for the fall semester.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the demands was a women's studies department, and that fall there were classes offered. It didn't coalesce into a program until the next year. But yeah, that was another fast one.
So take us back to when, how did you decide, how did your group decide that you were going to occupy the Asian Studies?
Someone had a key.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that person's name or the person they got it from, but that's the story of why it was that building. Well, it was an old Victorian house. It was easier than the administration building.
And it was nicer.
Nicer.
To hang out in, because you didn't know how long you were going
right.
to be
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Restrooms, kitchens, a water right. supply. Yeah.
There was a group of women who did security. There were chains on all the doors and the windows. And if you wanted to go in and out of the building, you had to go up 4 stories, I think, and down an old metal fire escape.
Yeah.
Down on all those 4 levels. And one of the reasons we said that we had this particular house was that it could be used as a daycare center, but you could not have carried
frightened,
screaming babies down that fire escape.
So how long did you actually occupy it for?
13 hours.
Wow. You got all your demands met that quickly with 13 hours?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I was not one of the people in the house. I was the designated babysitter. One of the organizers came to me and said, would you be willing to keep up to 10 children for up to 2 weeks? And I said, oh, of course.
I bet you were glad you were only 13 hours.
And I was totally prepared. And, gosh, it was 4 or 5 children for not even hardly overnight.
That is amazing.
There were 2 negotiating teams. A negotiating team went in and came back and said, they're just saying the same stuff. Oh, nobody's ever complained about this before.
That's a familiar.
And so we said, well, no, we're going to stay. That's not, we've had that before. And when the second team got ready to go back, I said, be sure and tell them that it's not just students, that some of us are going to be around longer than 4 years and we're going to remember. And we're staff and faculty wives, we're here. And so they said, well, you go tell them. So I went. I was on the second negotiating team. And one of the things that we found out from the first negotiating team was that they didn't want us to come out of the building after daylight because they didn't want the media taking pictures of us coming out of the building. And so we said, you know, if you want us out before daylight, you need to get on this stick here. And they did. They put us on agendas and stuff, even in the middle of the night.
And wasn't there somebody's wife on the other side of the negotiating team that urged her husband to meet the demands?
Not on the negotiating team. Well, my favorite thing of the whole thing was when I said, we're not just students, we're staff, we're faculty wives. You could see every, of course, male at the university senate committee, whatever it was, you could see them wondering if they knew where their wives were. Every single one of them.
Yeah, that was the story.
I like right. that. Instead of thinking, oh, well, if we fire those guys, they'll take their wives with them when they leave. They're thinking, Oakford, where is my wife? Yes, I know where my wife is. You don't have to wave at me. My wife actually studied at KU, but after that time.
It was a long time ago.
So you were faculty?
I was a staff member.
Staff member?
There were no faculty members in the building. There were faculty wives. And a faculty member had to have coughed up a key.
I see.
But we don't know who that person is.
I'm fairly sure the statute of limitations would have run out by now, but it's probably best not to mention any names. So how have the February Sisters continued to work for women's rights since then?
Well, we haven't really until right immediately after that. There were meetings. There were meetings to search committees for things, and there were lots and lots of meetings. And then we kind of didn't do anything. But there are young women all over Kansas who do history projects about the February Sisters. And so we put up a website so people could find us, so young mm-hmm. women could find us.
That's great. We have to take a short station break for a few announcements, and then we can come back and you can tell us more about how you got everything moving again.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm Liz Jeans with The Healing Touch, and I am a new underwriter for KKFI. The reason I'm doing that now is because our world is a little odd, and all I can answer is I have to keep an open mind, an open heart. I have to think globally. I have to act locally. KKFI was my answer. They address so many issues that are so important, speak of them intelligently, and the music variety and diversity is what makes our world great. For these reasons, I hope you choose to support KKFI and any way that you can. Thank you so much. For more information, please go to kkfi.org.
KKFI is sustained by generous listener support. Thank you for 30 years of belief in Kansas City Community Radio.
And we're back here at Every Woman, and our guests are Jo Anderson and Christine Smith, of the February Sisters. And we were just talking during the break, and you were discussing how you got the name for February Sisters. So can you tell us that?
I remember that a piece of paper came. They said, this is what we're handing out on campus, or this is what we sent to the chancellor. I don't remember. And they read it, and in it, it used the phrase February Sisters. And we all went, all right. Mary Coral remembered voting on it. And both of those things could have happened. but that's the one of those stories is true. So we don't know who thought it up. But we did discuss it. We did know it while we were in the building.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly sounds
organic.
Yeah.
It just organically happened.
And given the number of sororities that are at universities, I think having February Sisters probably did a lot of good for a lot of women in their careers.
There's also been February Daughters, and there's been September Siblings. And it seems to me like there was another one that was, so it's become a tradition.
That's awesome.
So you were going to say about how involved you'd been in women's rights after that, how things went with the meetings, and then how you got involved with setting up the Women's March in Lawrence.
Well, I kind of said, all right, I'm free now. And went into industry and became a tech writer for automated library systems and loved it. It was my favorite job. But I've always been into women's rights. I mean, Jo will tell us about how we got into the Women's March.
The Women's March, yeah. Well, I went to the Women's March in D.C., I refer to it as the real one.
Thanks a lot for those of us in the provinces who could only go to the one in Kansas City.
And Topeka, uh-huh. Which I've also heard were fantastic, by the way.
And my wife spoke at the Women's March in Kansas City last year. She said it was amazing being on the platform just to see her faces. She'd be telling this herself, but she's on the board at the moment, so she doesn't have a microphone over there.
Being at the Women's March in D.C., you know, I had just turned 70, so a lot of things had happened, you know. But being at this march changed my life. It was amazing. And what I remember about that was so unbelievable, the Kansas group was supposed to meet at this one corner. There was no way we could do that. Because the crowds were so huge that everybody was just pressing in on everybody else, which was fine. I mean, it was very kind, very good-natured. It was great. But you couldn't find your other groups. And we had been told that we would start marching on the parade route, which, if you're familiar with D.C., you know, it goes from, like, the Lincoln Memorial to Washington Monument and around, and then the pond and all that, that we would start marching, and that was the parade route, at 1 o'clock. And it got to be later than that. And by 2 o'clock, we had people climb a tree to look over to see what was going on, and they reported back, well, people are just kind of walking around in a circle. And I think there must have been several of us all over the group that realized at the same time, we can't march because we've filled the entire mall, so we cannot move. So what we did instead was we just moved out onto Pennsylvania Avenue and further out into downtown and took over all of downtown.
Because there were like 2 million women, or?
I would guess. I know that they started saying 250,000 by 9 o'clock, but even when we left at 3 o'clock, people were still coming in.
So what was that like when you were there? I mean, I've been to a few concerts before, but I mean, what was that like? Was it just
solid? It was absolutely awe-inspiring. It was so beautiful to see all these different people, men and women, mostly women, with the signs and the humor and the chanting. You know, singing would just break out spontaneously, chanting. And so probably the most dramatic part for me was we're marching down Pennsylvania Avenue. We're close to Trump Tower. And in come the police cars with these sirens that are supposed to be so loud they'll intimidate you or whatever. My reaction was, is that all you've got? Because I've been to basketball games at Allen Fieldhouse that were louder than those sirens. And here we are en masse. We have covered downtown D.C., and we all just kind of look at the cops like, where is it that you want us to go?
I know a hallmark of all of those marches was how friendly and civilized and polite people were.
Yeah, the bleachers that they put up for people to watch Trump come in were empty on his day. On our day, they were absolutely full, and people were all the way to the doors of the buildings. I mean, Pennsylvania Avenue was full of people. And we started thanking the police officers for keeping us safe. And they stopped their cars and got out, and some of them put on those hats that I'm not supposed to describe on the air, the pink ones with the little ears. Can I say that?
Yes, you can say pink ones with the little ears.
And I remember there was one Hispanic looking cop watching us with tears just pouring down his face. It was beautiful. So,
and from there to the current march.
To the current year. A friend of mine was telling me that there were commemorative marches all over the country. And did I want to go with her to either St. Louis or Chicago? And I said, sure, that would be fine. So I was telling Christine about this. Oh, thank you. Somebody handed me a tissue. And Christine said, well, there's a march in Pittsburgh, Kansas. And we looked at each other and said, well, we need to do a march right here in South Park at the gazebo. So that's how this year's march got started. And when we first began, we thought, well, you know, we'll just put out the word on Facebook and February Sisters and blah, 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 and we'll get a few speakers. And if 20 people show up, that's okay. And now what's the number?
800.
Yes. So a few more than what we had anticipated, and we have a week to go.
Yes. That is incredible.
Yeah. When you two get together, things just happen, like,
oh, yeah.
Really fast.
But we're used to that.
We've been organizing together a long time. A year ago, it was about a year ago, the Douglas County Republican Party brought this hate-monger lady to town, anti-Muslim lady. And
to Lawrence?
Yeah. And we organized a love a love picket and had 100 so people come. It
was
that was so
very cool.
Yeah, we do make trouble.
I think that's wonderful. Some people deserve to have trouble made for them.
Oh yeah.
And preaching hate and trying to discriminate against groups is definitely people that need to have trouble made for them.
Yeah.
That was one of the things at the Women's March last year. There was such a huge diversity in Kansas of speakers in Kansas City. There was a rabbi and there was a Muslim woman, and they spoke after each other and spoke in each other's favor and in support. And the rabbi said that if they insist on a national Muslim registry, then he's signing up and he will be Muslim rabbi, Mr.
Sure.
And just such a diversity of opinions and groups all speaking together and all supporting each other. It was a wonderful feeling.
I have to say, we hear a lot about fake news and things like that. And to me, the fake news is this divisiveness in the country, because I have to be honest. I mean, in my world, and I have many friends who are Republican, and I have many friends from all spectrums, and I feel like there's a lot more diversity and kindness in the real world that we live in than what we see portrayed in the mainstream media.
Yes.
And that's why we're glad you two are on, and that we have KKFI to just promote, you know, another alternative to all of the hate that's out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And tell us perhaps about the speakers that you've got coming and what you're doing next week.
I was going to write them all down here so I'd remember them all.
They're right here.
I've got them. Okay.
Thank you. Because I don't want to leave anybody out. Yeah, I am really proud of our speakers list. Okay. So we have a musician, Artis Ramberg. To me, she sounds kind of like Joan Baez. She's sort of a folk singer type person who's coming. And what I like about Artis, and she described herself to me, I sing mostly love songs. So it's not these rough, tough fight songs. It's beautiful coming together
songs. I know Artis, and she's awesome. So she's a great woman to talk to.
Absolutely. And then Karen Goldberg, who has been Poet Laureate of Kansas, is going to read some poems. Oh, where is this list? Oh, here they are. Okay. I don't have on my glasses, so I'm faking it. Oh, glasses!
There's
this is how women support each other.
The Gorgons that had one eye between their ears. One pair of glasses.
Okay. There's Julia Goodfox, who is a professor at Haskell, and it's hard to describe her because she's got so many things going on. If you look her up, she's got blogs, she's got opinions, she's got Twitter feeds. She's wonderful. She's, I think, the dean of College of Natural and Social Sciences. Ursula Miner is the president of the local branch of the NAACP. Cherie Taylor Jones is a Unity minister. Unity is a church that covers all spectrums. Seems like I'm leaving somebody out.
So Lisa Lawson?
Lisa
Lawson?
Yes, Lisa. There she is. Lisa Lawson. Yeah, she's one of the Lawrence City Commissioners.
And I think I see on the list Brooklyn Mosley.
And Brooklyn Mosley. Okay. Now, Brooklyn has, I've known her for a number of years, and she's done a number of things politically. She ran Paul Davis's campaign last time. She's working for him this time, but mostly she's just a huge organizer. She's been involved in Black Lives Matter and numbers of other things. So,
and I believe she's the Veterans of Foreign Wars program director at the moment, so that would have a lot of organization.
I know she was
skills.
Running the VFW in Lawrence for quite a while. Yeah, and they spoke so highly of her. Yeah.
And then I think I saw on your promotional piece that you're going to have a choir director who will teach you sort of more fighting marching songs.
That would be Cindy Novello. Yes. She will teach us some marching songs. She's offered to do that. She's a fine musician, but she mostly plays the violin. A beautiful, beautiful instrument. She didn't want to take it out in the cold, so yes. She offered her voice.
Well, we might be able to perhaps, I've got a couple of Ardis's CDs, so we may be able to play a song in your memory next week while we're on the air. But I don't think any of the fight songs, because we might lose our license to any other words.
No, she doesn't do those.
Okay. Don't keep your hand away from that button. I didn't say anything bad. I talked about not saying anything bad.
So now that you have got us all excited about the march, can you tell us how people can connect with, you know, I mean, the dates, the times, the any information?
Absolutely. The march begins at the gazebo at South Park. South Park is just south of downtown, if anybody doesn't know where it is, on Massachusetts Street.
In Lawrence, Kansas.
In Lawrence, Kansas. The music will start a little ahead of time while people are gathering. We have 1 o'clock as our starting time for the real event. We'll listen to the music, the poetry, learn some songs, and then begin the march. We do have to stay on the sidewalk. We are asking for volunteers to serve as marshals along the parade route. And if anybody would like to volunteer, they can send their information to, say it,
Feb Sister, FEBSISTER, one word, at yahoo.com.
And so if people who have volunteered as marshals, you know, they'll send us their information, we'll get back to them, but we ask them to show up about 12:30 so we can go over the rules. Stay on the sidewalk, stop for the traffic lights, probably have to march in a long stream, down to City Hall, and then back again to South Park. Bring signs, bring those cute little pink hats with the ears, and be prepared to sing.
And given the way the weather is at the moment, the cute hats with the ears or something like that will be needed to keep people warm while you're marching.
They're predicting 47 degrees and sunny.
Oh, wow.
Yay!
That's nice.
It will seem like swimsuit weather.
Yes. The sun shines on the righteous.
You two have magics.
Yes.
You've even got
the weather going.
Yeah.
Well, it's still just predicted, though. Alleged.
Yes. Alleged, right.
Yeah, that weather forecast could be fake news.
There are 3 other marches in Kansas. There's the one in Pittsburgh with the theme #MeToo.
Okay.
And it starts also at 1 in the afternoon in front of Russ Hall on the Pittsburgh State University campus. And there's one in Wichita at 11 in the morning. And I'm not sure where they're meeting.
I suspect people could find it on Facebook.
Yes. And then on the 21st, Sunday the 21st, there's a march in Topeka with the theme Power to the Polls, I believe. And
yes.
That's put on by the people that did the one last year. In Topeka. They put on a pretty good one last year, so.
And I know that I saw their event on Facebook this past week, and that's Sunday the 21st, and it's 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at the Capitol building, if anyone's interested. And they're having Kansas legislators and political candidates speaking there. And they, along with the theme of the national marches this year, their key theme is that people should vote and get involved in the political process. So they're celebrating the fact that women have got more involved and more political candidates that are female have won this year, but they want to encourage everyone to get involved and take part and vote.
I found the starting place of the Women's March in Wichita. It's hosted by Women's March Air Capital, and they will meet at City Hall, 445 North Main at 11 a.m.
I finally found the quote I was looking for. The focus of the National Women's March and anything affiliated with them is to register new voters and harness our collective energy to advocate for policies and candidates that reflect our values and collaborate with our partners to elect more progressive women candidates to office.
Perfect. We will have at least one table to register voters and probably two.
I think so.
Somebody else has just said they want to do it also. League of Women Voters
and the
Democratic Party
are both registering voters.
That's great. And I know how important it is in Kansas to double check after you've registered to make sure you really truly are registered and they haven't decided that there may be some slight technicality that stops you from voting.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chris Kobach.
So tell us what the lasting effects of the Women's March, the first Women's March, what do you see locally that the lasting effects of the marches?
I'm going to speak globally first.
Okay.
Because that to me is the effect. Women are powerful all over the world. I believe that the human race as a whole is entering a new era of human evolution, if you want to put it that way, and women have to lead the way. What is so important for me as a theme, as women, we are certainly not of one mind, but we do have to come together. We do have to support each other. And this is how we make progress in the entire human race. So that's globally. Locally, I feel that it's important for people like Christine and me and so many other strong women, because Lawrence is full of strong women.
Yes.
To
Amen.
Get together, to work together, to talk to each other, and then to act to make changes. I'm using the Kansas women in the Kansas legislature as my model. Their rule, if you want to put it that way, was when they got together to change the governor's tax policy, basically. When you came in the door, you left your politics behind. And they decided among themselves with little pink post-y notes, reminiscent of other things, they put up on the board what was important as far as how to spend tax money.
And this was bipartisan then?
Totally.
Yes. That's awesome.
And what was important on how to get the revenue. And they came to agreements. Here's what struck me and reminded me of the Women's March in D.C. At a panel discussion, the audience asked the question, what was the percentage of Democrat women to Republican women? The Democrat on the panel said it was about 60-40, 60% Democrats, 40% Republicans. The Republican on the panel sitting next to her said, oh, no, it wasn't. It was 60% Republican and 40% Democrat, which means if you were in that room, you believed the majority of the women were on your side. That's what I'm going for.
Yeah. And I know that was a very powerful thing that the women did, organizing independently. And then after they got a plan that was workable and a support bipartisan, then they invited the men in to join.
And they were able to override the governor's veto.
Yes. Which, for those of us in Kansas, is an absolutely awesome thing. Because of the effect on the education and all the limits that they were trying to put on individual funding from other towns that might have said, well, if there isn't enough money for the schools, well, we'll raise it locally. And then they were trying to sue them to stop them from doing that. And
yeah.
That makes it sound like an attack on education rather than actually a budget cut. Because if you were just trying to manage your budget and saying we don't have the funds, then you wouldn't sue people to stop them from putting extra money in.
That's true. Anyway, that was very successful. And their rule was leave your politics at the door. I really think when you enter into discussions like this, you also have to leave your ego at the door. I think they did that too. Because what the women came up with, it wasn't 100% of what anybody wanted. And one of our problems is people will hold on to one thing. And because of one thing, they can't agree with the whole program.
It's like some women are against abortion, yeah, and some women are for abortion rights. But you can all support each other on some common grounds, like things like equal pay and equal right to pay,
yeah,
and still get to benefit the vast majority of your individual issues and yeah, ideas.
Right.
So, Christine, what do you think the lasting effects of the marches have been?
Well, it's only been a year, and so lasting, maybe. Well, I'm having a little trouble with the word. What I think the immediate effect.
Okay, immediate. I guess the February sisters is the lasting effect.
Okay, the lasting first impression.
There's so much enthusiasm. Women have enthusiasm for working for candidates, for running. There's a someone quoted St. Joseph up the river of ways, saying they're happy with Trump. They've never had a demonstration there. And the women of St. Joseph created an organization called the Persisterhood. And they put on things all the time, every once in a while. And I'm so proud of women everywhere. And I think it just really empowered all of us. Whether we had been working on trying to empower ourselves for a lifetime or whether we were new at it. What a wonderful, wonderful bunch of energy that was.
I know what I see online. It seems to be a lot of women encouraging other women and men and everyone to phone people. And
yes,
that seems to be the big thing everyone's learned, is actually phone your representative. Even if you actually agree with them, phone them and let them know your
yes,
opinion. You're not going to agree with them on everything, because no one ever does, but phone them and talk to them. And you can tell how successful that is by how often you end up on the voicemail or how harried they sound when you get through. The tax one recently, when I phoned, I got through straight away and they sounded relaxed and unstressed, and I was like, we're starting to lose impetus again. So hopefully the new women's marches will revitalize people again and help them focus.
Yesterday morning, when I called Jerry Moran, my senator, after Donald Trump's they call them unfortunate, I call them obscene and racist comments, his lines were busy.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad that people are protesting on the issues of racism and possibly even obscenity.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't mind us going to a slightly different bent, I'd like to know what you think of the burning issues for women locally. And possibly if they're any different at all in Lawrence, because Lawrence is rather a blue blob in a sea of red. So I don't know if they're different in Lawrence to the rest of Kansas.
When we go and talk to college classes about February Sisters, we always ask what's going on, because that's a great organizing tool. And the rape culture is really a problem at the universities. The arrogance of the administration has empowered idiots, and the university is not really handling it all that well.
Can you explain what you mean by rape culture?
Go to almost any movie. I believe that we are trying to legalize rape in this country. There are states in which the father of a child of a rapist has rights, has visitation rights and stuff for the child. There's lots of states that don't really punish rapists. They go, oh, bad, boys will be boys, and that's it. When I was in school, when I was in college, women that got raped often dropped out of school. They got no support whatsoever. And that's one of the things that came in the wake of February Sisters was rape counseling. It happens in movies. It happens on television, just that men are allowed to do anything they want to women, sexually or any other way.
Yes, so many Hollywood romantic comedies, they have the guy basically being a creepy stalker, and because it's romantic comedy, she falls from him in the end, and they end up happily ever after, and guys think, oh, this is perfectly okay behavior.
Yeah, well...
And having our president normalize this kind of behavior is very, very ominous.
Yes.
And so this is what the women are saying?
This is what the women on campus are saying. Mm-hmm. In the town itself, women's issues in Lawrence are pretty much the same as everywhere else. We need equal pay. We need equal opportunities. We need to get rid of those people saying stupid stuff, the people in the government. Do you have a...
I think, yeah. Once again, my main concern is to make sure that we support each other. Unfortunately, I see a situation, and this happens, in churches, in political parties, everywhere, where people, instead of supporting each other and looking for common ground, it's almost like they feel like they have to look for differences. And as soon as you mention, for example, so-and-so would like to run for this office, someone says, oh, but she did such and such, instead of, yes, look at all of her qualifications. So probably my big issue going forward is going to be, how can we best support each other on all these things that are basic, that are important, that we can agree on? How can we support each other and get past all these minor things?
And I actually read an article this past week that said that boys are socialized to support each other and to be team players, and that if one of them fails, just try harder next time, it's good. And girls tend to be socialized, they get praised when they do something right, and not told, oh, never mind, try harder. It's often, you're a girl, so we didn't really expect much more of you than that. So girls often end up being perfectionist, but they also end up being competitive for that attention and get socialized to actually divide and destroy each other,
right,
rather than to support each other.
I think that's very true, and that's what I see. So we need to really, really get past that. And fortunately, we've got such wonderful, wonderful women in Lawrence. For the most part, I think most of us embrace this sisterhood idea. But boy, there's a lot of this kind of training that you're talking about to really look at, examine, and overcome.
Yeah, thinking of that training and thinking of the rape culture, I know that there was an article I read this week where some teenage boys who were tried as minors, and they had sexually assaulted, the article I saw said, they had sexually assaulted a girl, and they had live-streamed it on Facebook, right, and they just had their trial and the results of the trial this week. They pleaded guilty to one count of child pornography, and they have 5 years probation and are going to have to register as sex offenders. And that was the only thing they were charged with, the child pornography, not actually sexual assault or anything that would have carried a prison term.
But to me, I feel that, when you're talking about younger people and children, I think that we also need to set examples for boys as to what... we talk about the Me Too movement, which, of course, I'm 100% in favor of. But at some point, we need to turn the conversation around to talk to boys about what is acceptable.
Yes.
Because I would think it would be confusing.
I'm sure.
At this, time, what do you do if you're interested in a girl? And, so I do think that at some point, we need to bring the boys along.
Yes.
And,
absolutely,
mothers and fathers, we need to kind of come to a consensus about what's okay.
In an orientation. You're at this institution, and this is what it expected of you while you're here. There's nothing wrong with that.
But so many parents, when they've got girls, they worry about the daughters, and they raise them, and they tell them tips as they're raising them, like not staying out late and staying in well-lit areas. Carry your car keys in your hands so you can use them as a knuckle duster to hit someone with, because you can't carry weapons. But they don't tend to think of, instead of raising the girls as prey and what to do to try and keep yourself safe, of raising the boys and saying, you don't do this. And even if it's never entered your head that you might do this, these are things that might make a woman scared when she's with you, so do not do them. Like if you're out late at night and you're heading back to your car and you hear footsteps behind you, a lot of the time you will cross to the other side of the street to check if they're following you or not. And maybe it's coincidence that they cross over because they needed to. But so teaching boys that as they're growing up, these are things you can do to make people feel safer around you, and these are things that you can do to stand up for people that probably won't escalate things and get you in a fight.
Right.
Because we talk a lot, you know, I think we talk a lot about, you know, women and femininity and what that means, but I think we need to have examples of what positive masculinity is.
Yes.
Because really, the bottom line is, and Trump's included in this, I mean, he's an example of toxic masculinity.
Yes.
And that's kind of what's oppressing the whole world right now.
Yeah.
That men, you know, they think asserting masculinity is all about, you know, fighting and acquiring assets, including wives and things like this, instead of being strong and you know, and other things.
And never showing your feelings.
Paying off women.
Yeah.
Never showing your feelings. Masculinity, you're not supposed to ever cry or anything. Boys don't cry. And Obama got mocked again, even after he'd left the office, because when his daughters went off to university and he wasn't going to be seeing them very much, he cried because they're growing up and they're leaving, and it's a big step and a big change. And that's perfectly reasonable for any guy to do.
Biden and Obama is my favorite bromance. I love seeing those two together.
I love those memes.
I do too.
And then someone came up with the memes for the wives, for Joe Biden and for
Dr. Biden.
Yes, for Jill.
How do you, back in the 70s, in the 60s, how is the energy the same or different as far as the turbulent times that we live in today as compared to in the 60s?
I think probably the biggest difference, and correct me if I'm wrong, first of all, the birth control pill freed women up. You no longer were trapped by pregnancy and motherhood. So women gained power. That was huge. But probably even bigger than that was the fact that those of us of a certain age had our brothers, our friends, our cousins sent off to war to be cannon fodder, to be murdered in a totally illegal, unjustifiable war. And that fact just lit so many fires, because you are talking about life and death very literally. I feel the same rage within myself with Black Lives Matter. And that's as close as you can come now. Now, let's face it. Police officers have been murdering black men since there were black people and white people together ever. But now you can see it on videos. And that rage is as close as I can come to the rage that we felt over the war in the 60s. So to me, that's the difference. But I also see a similarity here.
And I think I should comment that it is, of course, Martin Luther King Day on Monday. Some people get time off school and off work and just take it as a holiday, but there is a growing organization and people getting organized to make it a day of service. So if anyone wanted to do any volunteer work on Monday, there are a lot of organizations on Facebook, or you can just Google and see volunteer opportunities in my area, and there's some that being specifically organized for Martin Luther King Day, and you can go out and do those if you're interested in doing that.
Yes, excellent.
So Christine, what do you feel about the energy from then as opposed to now in the country?
There was a time when people were really willing to put their bodies on the thing. You didn't have anything else, and so there were big demonstrations. There were lots of people who were, angry, and they didn't really always know why, and they were out there looking for answers as well as trying to change the world. And that's a little different. People, far more phone calls, far more people making phone calls, far more people sending emails and stuff to legislators, not as many people on the streets. And that's not necessarily bad or good. It's just a very different way. But it makes the Women's March with 2 million people in one city pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. I do think there was a more of a cooperation among the people that were in the streets or likely to be in the streets, that there was a sense of love and all that hippie stuff than there is today. There's a little more isolation between individuals, I think.
Well, we need to wrap up, so I'd like you to remind people, if they're interested in helping at all or getting involved with the February Sisters, how do they find you and how do they find details on the march?
There is a February Sisters Facebook page, and you just search February Sisters, and I think we're the only ones there. And there's information about the march there. There's also, it will give you a website. It's a long, complicated web address, or I would give it over over the air, that has all parking, where, you know, that sort of thing, where you can find ideas for signs and other things. And we have an email address, febsister@yahoo.com. We'll get back with you if you
want to volunteer
to be a parade monitor, a march yes. monitor.
Perfect. Thank you very much. And thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today. Oh,
my
thank
pleasure.
What an honor to talk with you two. Really. You ladies get stuff done.
Yes. You've done so much in your lives. We'd love to have you back as guests to talk to you again. And I have to tell everyone, you've been listening to Every Woman, ably engineered by my wife, Una Nowling, and hosted by Christina Fraser and me, Fiona Nowling, and joined by our wonderful guests today, Christine Smith and Joe Anderson. Stay tuned for Urban Connections with Donna Wolf and Guess Who's Coming to City, Kansas City, with MC Richardson. And stay tuned next week for another episode of Every Woman.